You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, Space and Treasure Coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and worldwide on the World Wide Web every Monday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on WWBC.
That's right.
Ellen, my wonderful right arm, my co-host that I count on to be with me on this show going on 14 years, is here today. Ellen O'Neill. She took a little break last week, but I am so happy to have her back.
That's right. A little break last week. We did a great show for Memorial Day weekend, and I hope everyone had a fantastic end of May and happy June. We are heard each and every week at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 AM WWBC, and also you can hit that listen live button and you can get us on any one of your listening devices. Of course, as Sita said, we also have the three FM stations. You can also hear our show on our blog, which is on our website, sitamediainc.com, as well as all of the Facebook shares that we do, which is on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and also on Sita's personal page, Sita Begee.
Yeah, it looks like people don't like going to the show's page. They like my personal page.
Well, because, you know, it has all that personal stuff on it.
And it has drama.
That's right. A little bit extra.
So, you know, as usual, we've got a really action-packed show today. Ellen and myself and Allie, when she can make it, we hope she's feeling better. We talk about stuff here on our show, social issues, political issues, docudramas. We chat with artists and people who write songs, whatever it is. We talk to people here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, and we have a robust discussion with folks. So today's no different. I was watching Netflix one day, and I came across this film called Angelina. And I was amazed with this film about self-love and kindness and compassion and someone just rising up from being down and out in their luck and just spreading so much joy and happiness to others. And so I decided to Google who made this film, Angelina, and I realized that it was a filmmaker by the name of Uga Carlini. And so I decided to contact her and see if she could call in on our show.
So we have a little technical challenge today, and that is Uga is calling in on WhatsApp, so Sita has to hold the phone next to the microphone so that Uga can also hear her questions.
That's right.
So there you are. So it's great to have you on the show today.
Yes. Thank you for taking the time to call in from Cape Town, South Africa. Good afternoon, and how are you?
Hi, good evening for me. Good afternoon to you. I'm very well. It's freezing in Cape Town. We are very cold. We're 50s, though. Cold to us is probably not cold to you. But anyway, cold it is, and we're loving it. And there's a fire in the fireplace. And yeah, it's 7 o'clock in the evening here, and it's calm down time. My boys are almost asleep, so it's a good time of the day.
It's calm down time sounds like a good time for us to have a conversation, actually. It sounds like it's rest and relaxation time.
Yes, suicide hour is over, and we survived another day, and now it's calm down time. It's the best time of the day.
Thank you. Well, our second segment, we're going to have a lady by the name of Donna Williams-Watson, and she's going to be calling in from Charles City, Virginia, to speak about her movie. It's called Hope in the Dark, and it's about her son, Troy, who was addicted to opiates And after becoming a police informant, he passed away. And so she made a film about why people should not become police informants when they are addicted to opioids. So that is the second segment. And our first segment is with Uga Carlini. And she's a multi-award winning filmmaker. And boy, we are honored to have you call in and speak about Angelina. I was just telling Ellen that that film is about love. It's about friendship. It's about trust. It's about respect. It's about greed. It's about taking risks. And above all, it's about having compassion for each other. Did I cover it all?
You did. It's also about assholes. You just left that one out.
Yes.
we learn very quickly, but absolutely. And we've got a very nice saying in South Africa called Ubuntu, which is very similar to yoga's namaste. It's everything I love about South Africa in one film.
That's right. So you are an award-winning film director, and you're one of South Africa's most versatile and celebrated directors. I mean, it is amazing that you also are the founding member of Tower Keep Creations. And Angelina is not your first film. You've made films before, and you're working on other films as well. So how did you get into this business?
Well, my company specializes in female-driven heroine stories because I was raised by a very fierce single-parent mother. And I suppose, and I have a sister, so all females. And I suppose that very much shaped me without me knowing it at the time. And it's just what I've always been drawn to. You know, it's about what inspires me. And it's like Oprah Winfrey used to say, you know, her overnight success took 25 years. It's the 25 years that's the inspiring part. It's the how do you get there that keeps me personally going. And this has always been what I wanted to do. But I went to study acting and filmmaking and sort of acted for a while because I always believed that would give me more tools for my bag as a director. And but the final destination was always going to be directing. It's just how I got to it was quite interesting because it all happened while I went to Fiji because I traveled extensively in my late 20s and into my 30s. And one of the places I ended up was Fiji. And that's really where the big swap over happened. And I wrote the syllabus for acting, filmmaking, and screenwriting for the university there and started the film department up with their pioneer students. And it was such an incredible chapter of my life and very humbling and inspiring experience with these students. Many of them are still my friends today. And then I came back to South Africa and my company was born. And ironically, the film that I started with, I've now finished. And then I made Angelina and Alison before that. It's just how it worked out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I give birth, you know, it's a child. It's one of my children. And I'm a dog with a bone. I can't stop until it's done.
Yeah, and I like the names you choose for your film. They're all Alison, Angelina. And what, do you have another female name coming up for another film?
Oh, I'm sorry to disappoint, but the next one is called Beyond the Light Barrier. But it is about Elizabeth Clara, the world's most trusted contactee story. So, and contactee in inverted commas, of course, for the believers and the non-believers out there. But, yeah, this one didn't get the lady's name.
Yes.
But it certainly is going to tell the story of a very, very fascinating and forward-thinking and flawed female from the 50s that became a cult status figure, especially in the United States, actually, for her extraterrestrial adventures. Let's call it that.
Well, thank you. So for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Uga Carlini, and she's an award-winning, multi-award-winning film director and so many other things, writer, calling in from Cape Town, South Africa. And I happened to come across her movie, Angelina. It was released on Netflix on October 8th. And it is about a formerly homeless parking attendant who was diagnosed with a fatal disease. And she really dared to put her lifelong dream of traveling into the world into motion after recognizing that, hey, life is short and I need to follow my dreams and love myself so fiercely that I'm going to do it. Now, in the movie Angelina, you know, in Trinidad, we call a mixture a callaloo. Like you have a mixture of everything. And Angelina, the movie, reminds me of this mixed bag of so many different things in it. So you kind of created a callaloo from the top to the bottom because you've got a mixture of characters, you've got a mixture of races, of people, of everything. How did you accomplish that?
Gosh, that's such a lovely saying. I'm going to steal that.
Yes.
I wish you told me this before the film. I would have framed it from the rooftops. It's a lovely word.
Yes.
And you absolutely hit the nail on the head, because I likened it to a packet of, I don't know if you have this in the States, but it's a sweet called a licorice all sorts. And it comes in all these wonderful different colors. And the thing is, that is very much what South Africa is. You know, we've got 11 official languages. So, I mean, official, that excludes the different dialects. We come from such a melting pot, even within the indigenous tribes of South Africa. There's such a variety, each with their own language and cultures, and it's beautiful, you know. It's one of the things that inspires me most about my country. So with all of that in the background, that also comes with colors and it's sort of for me a metaphor for this melting pot of that which is South Africa. We are rightfully called the Rainbow Nation, right? And the film, the color palette of the film is very much that of a rainbow.
You brought that out beautifully in the film, but I read on your Facebook that the film had an international presence at so many places. Talk to our listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends about the awards you won for Angelina, as well as all the places that you were able to show this film.
So Angelina was shot during a very difficult time. We shot it during COVID. And when the film came out, South Africa went into yet another lockdown. So we weren't allowed to do any premieres because physically we were not allowed to. And traveling was also very, very difficult still, because remember, we really are at the bottom of Africa where we are. So we were one of the last countries to come out of lockdown and for travel bans to open up on and all of that. So we were also very limited to festivals, unfortunately, which is often a really nice way South African films to travel before it goes to the streaming platforms. But Netflix did give it a world premiere, which it went to pretty much, I think I'm speaking under correction, but to almost every country that they're in, except for Arab-speaking countries, because we carved out a little deal with them, with the kindness of Netflix. And then we could only do, because of that, there were only two sort of big competitions that we qualified for here, and that was the South African Oscars, which is called the SAFTAs, the South African Film and Television Awards, for which we were nominated for two, Best Four and Best Supporting Actor for Tsamane Tsebe, Mr. Majaba, who is really the likeness of Mandela, and he won. And then a great honor came when we were nominated for the African Academy Awards. So this is an award for the entire African continent, the best of the best for African films.
Yes.
And we had seven.
You made us fall in love with South Africa. A lot of my friends who watched the film, they're like, boy, we need to visit. I think you're sort of an ambassador for your country as well. And the love you've shown for the South African people is really commendable. I mean, you just brought everything out so beautifully with your cast. So how did you find the actress?
Thank you.
You're welcome. How did you find the actress to portray Angelina?
Gosh, it's such a beautiful full circle story, that actually. So when I was still an actress, I used to have, in my early 20s now, right? I'm still paying back student loans, life is tough. And I had a drama studio where I did, I taught drama, acting as part of extra income. And it, on my acting walls, on my studio's walls, I had posters of my favorite theater shows at the time in Cape Town. And one of those theater shows was a show called Sape. And Yodia Samson was actually a homeless person in that show. The poster I had on my wall was the sticker, the first round of the show happened. It was so popular they brought it back. And obviously not all the actors were available, so there were new actors. So the poster were the new actors, but the reason I had the poster was because of her performance in it. And that was like a good 20 years ago by the time we started looking at, but who's going to be Angelina? And then I was at a dear friend of mine's birthday dinner, and she's a casting director, and she said to me, listen, when you start looking at Angelina, don't forget about Yodia Samson. And that's when I clicked, but that's the poster on my wall from 20 years ago. I reached out to Yodia, and we spoke for 2 years about this character, because there was just always something that went wrong with the funding, and then COVID happened.
Yes.
So this film, we really did, you know, on that, we were broken by the time we started shooting. There were so many challenges, but everyone in true Angelina style came through the outside and made the best possible film they could under very difficult circumstances for the world at the time.
Yeah, and you know, the one of the most lovely things about you, Uga, is that you really keep a woman in your heart as you make these films, and you give us a place in society, and you give us a place of independence, and you make people see that it's okay for us to be a woman, be the heroine of a film, face the hardships, have the sacrifices, and still promote self-love. And I that's what I get from your film, and I think it's absolutely wonderful the way you portrayed Angelina and her friends as well, because there was a scene when they had a fight, and women do fight, and they make up, and they break up, but then that love and that compassion for humans, we get it back, and you show it. It's a family. What your film is about, it's about family.
And it's about family is the family you choose. It doesn't have to be the family that's born to you by blood. And I think that was very important for me and Angelina. You know, not everyone is lucky enough to have a super family, to have the most supportive family in the world. A lot of people come from a very toxic family. And Angelina is that reminder that, you know, family is the family you choose. And you know, you are who you've been waiting for. So yeah, you really get my film. I thank you for that.
You are so welcome. So now, the scene in the movie with the flowers, is that something from your childhood, or how did you weave that into the story? Because, you know, I am a nurse, and my husband is a retired emergency room physician. So we've been around hospitals and patients all our lives, and you hit the nail on the head. The experience of just coming into a hospital is so difficult for so many people. But if you have that smiling face and those flowers just before you go in, it warms a person's heart. It's not about receiving a bouquet in the room. It's about that face that you see before you enter your hospital room.
Yeah, like I said, if I can marry you right now, I will. You're probably the person that gets this movie the best out of anyone I've ever spoken to. And the reason for that is my mum was a medical technologist and worked at a state hospital. So in South Africa, we have private medical care and then we have state medical care. So state medical care is if you can't afford private health care, but it's tough. You know, you've got to go sit in long queues. You might have to wait 2 or 3 months or whatever. And my mum worked at Tigerberg Hospital, which is a state facility. And we spend a lot of our, you know, because she's a single parent, so a lot of our childhoods, during the school holidays, we would go to work with my mum. Or, you know, we would go spend some time there. And one of the things my mom actually did as we were growing up is every time we hit that wobble, teenage wobble of, oh, I'm fat, I'm ugly, you know, a lot of teenagers go through, a lot of people go through that. My mom would actually take us to the pediatrics ward and let us spend time with children who either have a few months left or have actually come from really survived a massive brain operation, and it just gave such context for one's problems. And for me, that, and the, we've got an incredible, our nation is so creative. We've got so much poverty, we've got so much pain, and yet, you know, there's always a smile, there's always someone making a plan. We're so resilient.
Right.
And those flowers stand for all of that, the resilience that inspires me and also breaks my heart some days, because it's tough if you have to be resilient every day of your life. Like right now, we have so much load shedding. Our power is off more than it's on, and this already, you know, in many homes, people aren't lucky enough to have whatever it is many of us do have. So you are forever humbled in South Africa by the small things, because it's the small things that break it or make it. You know, a smile is free. A kindness is free. And that's the stuff that can change a life. So that's sort of the metaphor for that. Angelina, she literally... She didn't have the opportunity to go and study. She didn't have the opportunity to you know, be a great artist. But she goes, you know what, I'm going to be it anyway. It's like if you have to ask someone who can sing, maybe four people put their hand up. But we didn't ask who can sing well. We can all sing. It's not all of us is Lady Gaga or Beyonce, but we can all sing.
Yes, it's so about and it's about kindness, too. I mean, she was kind to people no matter how little she had. And you know, when you describe South Africa, that's pretty much how Trinidad and Tobago was when I grew up. They would you know, cut off the electricity in certain parts of the island and charge certain parts, and then water, we would have running water for maybe 3 hours, and then they'll lock it off, and then the other area would have water. So we grew up with, you know, filling our rain barrels and having a flambeau and a lamp with kerosene. So I understand exactly what you're saying, and you're right. It, you know what, poverty makes you very, very humble and grateful for what you have as well. But let's transition a little bit away and tell our listening audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, my friend Uga Carlini, where they can watch the film and give us a quick little insight about the other film, Into the Light.
Okay, I'm going to also actually just tell your viewers real quick about my first, because that's a very inspiring and healing film as well, and that's called Allison, mm-hmm. and that's on Amazon, and it's South Africa's biggest survival story of Allison Burka, who was abducted. Terrible things were done by her to her. There were 11 medical miracles why she couldn't have survived, and yet she just defied every single rule in the world and survived and became one of South Africa's biggest motivational speakers. So that's Allison on Amazon in the States. Then Angelina, you just have to get the spelling right because it's A-E-N-A. Otherwise, you get Angelina Jolie, which we love her too, but this one is Angelina, so I-E-N-A. And Netflix. And then Beyond the Light Barrier, we're just rolling out. So I invite your listeners to please come join us on the... They can either follow my company, which is tuvercorpcreations.com, or myself, or any of these movies have their own Facebook and Instagram pages where they'll be able to see where they can watch. But the new one will be on Amazon as well. That's coming out in September. And it really, the story has a cult status following in the United States, because in the 50s, Elizabeth Clara, a woman from South Africa, had the most incredible scientific knowledge that was impossible for someone to have of that time, never mind a woman, of course. And it was so profound that she was flown to the UN to a massive conference in Wiesbaden, Germany, where 22 of the world's greatest minds quizzed her, because it was just impossible to know what she knew. And when they asked about her, how is it possible for you to know this? She just casually remarked because her boyfriend from an advanced human race took her in his spaceship and he went and he showed her. So, you know, for a lot of people that ruined it, and for a lot of other people they were fascinated. And she then wrote a book called Beyond the Light Barrier, a non-fiction book, and that's what became the Gold Status book. And we've been very blessed and lucky to have Dr. John Carney, one of South Africa's biggest, well, he is our biggest export star. He's in Murder Mysteries 2 at the moment, Your Side, and he was in Black Panther, and he's our narrator. And having been with this project for 13 years, this one's a documentary, I have found out a lot of things, because this story has been with me since the age of 8. The good, the bad, and the ugly will be unveiled and unpacked this fall.
Yeah, I am going to watch Allison on Amazon. I'll try to watch it tonight because I'm not doing anything later, so I will.
Oh.
But I wanted to ask you really quick, you know, social media can hurt us and it can help us. I tend to think it's my friend and it was created just for me because I use it for great things. But I know you've had a lot of people that tweeted you or spoke to you or, like me, contacted you through social media. Are there any, like, memorable tweets or messages or anything that you remember that you said, oh, wow?
Listen, I'm not on Twitter. I'm not even on Twitter at all. So for me, it's Facebook or Instagram. I get quite inundated, and, you know, sometimes a lot of things get lost. And it's not always possible for me to respond, especially with my project Allison. We had a lot of people reach out to us who've had similar experiences, a lot of it violent. And, you know, I'm a filmmaker. My medium and my tool is telling the story. But I'm not a doctor and I'm not a psychologist. And I help by telling these stories. So sometimes it can be really tough because... And I can't read everything, and I, you know, it's a very dangerous place for a filmmaker when a film comes out. I tend to sort of only read the nice stuff.
Yes, yeah, because people think you could help them, and they want you to now fix their lives. We actually had a woman that told us she wanted to reach out to you with her story. If somebody had an idea for a great story, is there a way for them to contact you, or maybe, I mean, I know she's listening. And I bet you get tons and tons of people that want you to do a story because you are amazing and you're approachable and you're kind and you're knowledgeable and you have the experience that women want in a leader. So I it's just natural that somebody would say, hey, I wanted to hear my story as well.
I do. Thank you for those kind words. Sure. Maybe you can be my life coach as well and remind me when days are tough. I've got lots of those. I think, listen, I'm always so scared, though, you know, I don't want to miss the next big story, but what listeners need to remember, there's a lot of legalities around these, and that's why in the States you have agents and representation, because in 5 years from now, someone turns around and says, but that's my story, even when maybe it isn't, it's just the likeness of. So there's a lot of legal things. You can't just send someone... I've had a lot of incredible people send me their books that they've written because a book is easier because you can option that and there's a strict legal code around that. But someone's personal story, you've got to understand there is only 24 hours in a day, but the cream does rise to the top. I'm not saying other people's stories is not the cream, but what I'm trying to say is I can only do so much. I can only do one project at a time, and projects take forever because I write and direct, and I have a team that I work with. So I don't even always get through all my emails in a day.
Yeah, you probably get a lot.
WhatsApp, I realize.
Yes,
I
think
I missed one of your WhatsApp.
Yes, well, I tell you what, I am just grateful to God that you did answer me because I absolutely love your work. And what I love about you so much is you always give thanks and praise, number one, to your team. You have recognized that your films could not be as successful as they are if you didn't have a dynamic team. You praise the persons from the beginning to the end of that film, from the writers, the directors, the people that work on your film, the extras, And not everybody takes the time to thank the little guy. And I think that shows a lot about your character and who you are as a person.
Thank you. No, I really, you're only as good as the team that surrounds you. And it really takes a village. And my village is pretty spectacular. And I'm very lucky to have it.
So before we go off air, I just want to thank you, Uga Carlini, award-winning film director, for calling in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And if you were to meet someone in an elevator and you had only 30 seconds to tell them about your production company and your films, what would you tell them to inspire them to actually go home, calm down, find a calm hour, and get this Callaloo on the road and say, I am going to watch this film?
That's a good question. I love that word, Callaloo. You lost me there because I was just, I love that word. It's a good word. I'm going to name my kids Cat that, I swear. Listen, I would say to them, I'm going to ask them, depending on their mood, if they just want to feel warm and fuzzy and just escape for an hour and a half, watch Angelina, because Angelina is your personal reminder that you are who you've been waiting for, and that the only person standing in your way is not A, B, or C. It's just you. That's the good news and that's the bad news. But it's dealt with in a very beautiful Amelie of Africa kind of way. Then, if you feel like you're down in the dumps, things are dark, and the sun, you're not quite feeling the sun on you like you should, watch Alison. Because if Alison can survive what she did, you can survive anything and be anything you want to, no matter what the challenges are. And some days you just have to lie down and take a moment and cry or eat the chocolate or stay in your pajamas. Tomorrow you try again. It's okay. So I would say about my company, though, because I've said nothing about that, I would say I've been specializing in hero and stories since 2010. I'm a late bloomer. I had my kids in my 40s. I made my first film in my 40s. It's not too late. And don't let the obsession with youth tell you otherwise.
Well,
and youth, we love you too. I just wasn't ready. I wasn't as savvy and as healed as a lot of the youth is today. I look at them with such admiration.
Well, my friend, thank you for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. One day I'm going to make it to South Africa, Cape Town. I will see you. I will eat some chicken tikka masala with you, and I'll make the Callaloo. And boy, that would be a story for the masses.
Well, I might come see you first.
Well, you have an invitation to my 60th birthday party. I'll send you invitation. You come and bring those boys. It'll be fun.
There you go.
That sounds fabulous. Thank you for all the great work you do as well.
You're welcome. Thank
what
you
a,
again
what
for
a
calling
great
in.
Story. Thank you for sharing all of those
Bye-bye.
Great stories.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We're going to take a quick break here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and revel in all of this great first segment that we had with Uga Carlini, and we'll be right back with these right after these great messages.
Own furniture dealer.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida,
Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000 or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Right here in Cocoa, Florida, we are heard on FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, AM 1510, WWBC, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet. We just had a great segment from a film director in South Africa, an award-winning film director.
With films right now on Netflix and award-winning.
Amazon.
Yeah, Netflix and Amazon.
How much more famous can we get, right?
That's right.
She's
the famous one.
Well, we're just so happy to be part of this universe and do our bit to help human beings, right?
Yeah.
And we are just blessed that we had an award-winning film director, very famous, I should add, Uga Carlini, that called in on our show. I just feel so blessed that God sends such great people my way. And today is a day about films and what people are doing to make films. Our other guest is our friend Donna Williams-Watson, and she's calling in from Charles City, Virginia. She also made a film, and her movie is called Hope in the Dark. And you remember her, Ellen?
I do remember.
And I think she's on the phone, and she was so patient to wait until our commercials ran through. Mm-hmm. So, Donna, thank you for taking the time to call in today. And we want an update from you about what's going on with your movie, and bring us up to speed about what's new in the memory of your beloved son, Troy.
Yes, ma'am. First, I'd like to thank you guys, because you guys do an incredible job. And the last segment with the filmmaker, she was amazing. And we haven't made a film yet, but we're in the process of making that film. We're still trying to raise funds for this very important film about the opiate crisis, and based on my son's journal. We're hoping to start filming sometime in the fall or winter, if we can get enough funds. We are partnering with the National Christian Foundation, and they're incredible as well. It's a faith-based film, but the film itself is for everyone. It's not just for someone that's facing the opiate crisis. As a matter of fact, it's more for people that don't understand the opiate crisis. There's so much stigma out there around that crisis. And right now, the opiate crisis is at an all-time high with the fentanyl coming over, and people just don't understand it. They just think people can stop at the drop of a dime, but they can't. It doesn't work that way.
Right. And you dealt a lot with Troy's addiction. Tell our listeners a little backstory about what happened and what happened when he became a police informant. Because people don't understand that sometimes it doesn't go your way if you decide to become an informant.
That is correct. So my son was the All-American kid, great grades, good-looking boy, played sports, had his college all picked out, wanted to be a Florida Gator. And he was in a car accident his senior year of high school. He was number one on the tennis team, and he was med-flighted to a hospital, in and out of surgeries, but kept on pain pills for over 8.5 months. I didn't really understand addiction at that time, but after my son spent a 12-year battle of this horrible, horrible disease, I probably know it better than anyone. Anyway, the my son was, he fought it. He was, became clean for a few months at a time and then fell back into the slimy pit. It's all about after you get clean where you have to, what you have to do and who you cannot hang around with. And basically people should move away from where that environment is. But so after my son had the accident, after he became clean off and on, in and out of rehabs, he finally, I'm telling you, my son finally was beating that slimy demon that puts everybody that they almost can't get out of. He was clean for about 6 months, and one day, you know, when you are an addict, sometimes you fall. One day he fell back. Doesn't mean you're a failure, you just keep moving on, but my son had to be Narcan back to life that very day. And when I got to the hospital, there were some detectives sitting by my son's bed and giving him two options. And the two options are either you can sit out the rest of your probation in jail, or you can work for us as an informant. My son didn't want to do either, but they told him he only had to do it twice. Two times led into 4, 6, 8, 12. They continued to use my son. But during the time that he was an informant, my son, of course, going back into that environment, started skimming off of the pills or drug that he was buying for the detective. So he let them know.
He was helping himself to some of the drugs that was he was supposed to be helping them to confiscate.
Right. When you're an addict, you're not that strong. You're not that strong to, it's like putting a kid in a candy shop, like I told you guys last time. You can tell them to touch it, feel it, smell it, and hold it, but you can't have any. That they don't have that type of control, especially if he had only had 6 months clean and he fell the very day. And the very day he actually died and was Narcan back to life, was made to be an informant. That would have told you right there my son was not strong enough. But during these buys, he let them know that he was failing drug tests with probation. But instead of them pulling him off, saying, "Okay, son, you can't do that," because that is their guideline, is if you use narcotics or if you fail a test, they're supposed to remove you. But they continue telling my son it was okay, don't do it again. Well, he died one day after doing a buy, and it was the most horrific thing. I didn't know my son was failing these drug tests, or I would have done something. The guilt is just eating me alive because I didn't know. He was so good at hiding it. But they knew, and I'm in the process of taking care of that. But I am now making sure I have a Troy bill that I am trying to get passed, and it basically they have to follow. They just can't have guidelines. It's going to be a law. They're going to, hopefully it will pass this session when it comes up again in January. And it's a common sense law. You have to be clean, tested before and after. All incidents
you just said two words that a lot of people don't understand anymore. Common sense, right, Ellen?
It's not so common, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And that's a sad thing, because anyone would know if the boy is telling you he's failing a drug test that he's not doing what he's supposed to do. I mean, common sense would have told the normal person to say, okay, he can't do this, we'll have to use someone else.
Well, but and if I remember correctly, you had said also that you were trying to get some type of wrongful death, or, you know, something that holds the police department accountable for allowing this to happen. And if I remember correctly, the last time you said that you were kind of getting bounced around quite a bit still.
I haven't stopped fighting. So I started out in Chesterfield Court because I didn't want to go to the local, the county that did this, because, you know, those were all the police officers involved. So I went to Chesterfield County, and the judge threw it out because the other side filed demur saying they didn't know anything. And a demur is just a something saying, hey, she shouldn't have this because we don't know anything about it, or whatever their reasoning is. But what they don't know is I have all these texts back and forth on my son's phone, what's my phone, but on the phone, back and forth from my son to the detectives. And the judge threw out both cases, a wrongful death and intentional tort. The intentional tort is a case where they invaded my son's funeral home. And at that time, I didn't know how my son had died. But they invaded my son's funeral home to arrest his best friend for child support. They put him in shackles and handcuffs. It was just, it was barbaric. It was incredible.
That's awful. So I read where you recently wrote a judge, and you asked a judge in your letter to reopen the case, and he wrote you back?
Well, I did. So I went to the Supreme Court of Virginia twice. I went to the United States Supreme Court, and they told me the statute of limitations had run out. Well, I spent 2 weeks straight reading the statute of limitations in Virginia and found out there is something called a discovery rule. Well, discovery rule basically means if you find out any more new discovery, they can extend the statute of limitations. And then there's another rule in that discovery rule called tolling. And that means if they are withholding information or paperwork that you need, that will pause your statute of limitations. So I wrote the judge a letter and told him that, and he told me, the one in Chesterfield, I asked him would he reopen it. He said, sorry, Donna. He was very nice. He said the statute of limitations had run out. Well, I didn't feel confident enough to go back and say, I'm sorry, Your Honor, you're wrong. So what I did do is go to another locality. Now that I know that my statute of limitations is still good, I went to another locality because I thought, what would the judge say if I told him he was wrong? He'd probably think I was crazy, as well as the Supreme Court of the United States. They're the ones that told me the statute of limitations, and I certainly wasn't going to go up against them. They would say, she just told us we were wrong. I didn't want that to happen. So I went to another locality, and you're allowed to go to different venues as long as someone that you had in the suit lives in that area. That's, you know, that's the law here in Virginia. And I wrote the judge a letter before I even filed it and told him everything I had done, from going to Chesterfield to the Supreme Court twice, to the Supreme Court of the United States, to what they said, back to Chesterfield. And then he and asked him, would he please let me file it in this court? And this was in Petersburg. And he sent me a letter back, and he said, as long as I filed it correctly, I could file it. Well, this was a huge victory for me. I was so excited. They had set the court date for October. And then a news media went out by CBS, an investigative reporter by Leah French, and then it went national. 2 days later, I get a call from the courts, and the judge wants to have a pretrial conference. And I'm thinking, oh gosh, I'm actually getting somewhere. I'm really doing it. And I was so happy that I was going to actually have justice for my son, and he didn't die in vain. And that was set for June 15th, which is right around the corner here. Then all of a sudden, the other side files that demur again. And before the June 15th pretrial conference, and I walk in, and I'm thinking everything's going to be okay because the judge had given me a letter. Well, it was a different judge. The judge didn't give me a second, didn't even look my way. He listened to what the other side said, and they said they wanted to have it transferred back to Chesterfield, you know, the courts that threw it out without listening to me.
You're being bumped around. You're being bumped around from court to court.
And the ACLU can't help you at all?
Who?
The ACLU or any organization like that?
This is the funny thing. I've been so upset because I've been working on this for 4 years, and I can't seem to get anyone to listen. All I'm asking is for a day in court. So I went in and called ACLU on Friday. This all happened last week where they said, now I have to go back to Chesterfield, and you know what's going to happen when they set a court date, which will be, I'm sure, soon. The judge is going to throw it out again. They just keep bumping me out, and their last thing was, you know, the statute of limitations has run out. Well, now I'm going to have to tell a judge he's wrong, and I have this discovery, which I hate that, because you can't tell a judge he's wrong. But
well, so they've been telling you you're wrong, so I think you should change your idea about that.
Yeah.
I think
well,
you should let them feel it a little.
Well, I'm going to do it. I don't know if they'll listen to me, but the ACLU, I am praying, and I am praying to the Lord that I've called, left 3 messages, and sent an email. I'm hoping that they will, this was on Friday, I'm hoping they will contact me. And I even contacted the governor of Virginia, Governor Youngkin. He's an incredible guy. And I contacted his office this morning. I didn't speak to him, but I just said, please, I need your help. All I'm asking is for a day in court. I'm not asking a win or a lose. Of course, if I get in there and I show my concrete black and white evidence and it's a jury trial, there's no way they will turn me down
because I have it. And Donna, you are representing yourself in all these these cases, which is very difficult, but it's also coming from your heart. And you're passionate about bringing the story of Troy and his addiction and becoming a police informant and them knowing that he was testing positive because he was dipping into the drugs that he was supposed to be getting for them. And I think anybody who hears the story, they can feel your pain and they can feel your sorrow. I just don't understand why they're bumping you around so much. But I wanted to ask you a little bit, tell us a little bit about your son before he became addicted and the relationship you had with him. Because I remember you telling us that his dad supported you for a while, but then he moved on, correct?
Well, his dad has always, always loved his son. But, you know, when you're dealing with someone in addiction, I have to say I stuck by my son and never left his side. There's so many parents that use that tough love. And I'm not saying tough love isn't appropriate sometimes, but my son and I were best friends. After, and even before he became addicted to this nasty drug and after, he worked with me every day. He was just incredible with computers. He was brilliant. I mean, he never picked up a book in school. Super athletic. All the girls loved him. He had two really hard relationships that he thought he was in love both times, but especially the last time. And the young lady went out with his best friend. My son was just a sweet, kind soul, and maybe too sweet. I mean, maybe he was just too nice, and that's the reason. I don't know what the reason is, but he was an incredible giving guy. But the one thing cool about this story, about this movie that's getting ready to come out, if we can ever get to it, what's really cool about it is that it shows that even though Troy was struggling, fighting his own demon, he reached out to everyone that he knew and his best friends and introduced them to God and told them that's the only way out and you have to have God. And so still today, some of the friends that are still living and that still stay in contact with me, they have started spreading the word and it's trickled on down. So the movie is going to show God's grace, how Troy was struggling, but he reached out to help someone else, and that person reached out to help someone. It just trickled on down, and it's still continuing today, and it's a beautiful story, but it's a sad story.
Yeah, it's very interesting how you're trying to come up with the money, kind of like crowdfunding in a way. So tell our listeners and Viewpoint with Sita and friends how we can help you to get this movie made, and the name speaks for itself. It is shrouded in a little bit of darkness, and you do have a lot of hope. So tell our listeners a little bit how they can help you.
Okay, well, there's a website set up, and it's called hopeinthedarkmovie.com. And there is a link, you know, after you read all about the movie, there is a link where you can donate. What people need to understand is this is a tax-deductible donation because it goes straight to the National Christian Foundation. And, you know, you can even sponsor the movie, and your business or company will be in the movie. So you can sponsor, and the bigger the donation, of course, the better. But that most people would much rather sponsor a movie than to pay Uncle Sam. So if they wanted to do a tax-deductible donation, they could go to that website, hopeinthedarkmovie.com. And if it's a big sponsor, it'll talk about the sponsorship on the website. If they did a big sponsorship, you know, they could call either the producer, which is Sean Justice with Justice Productions, or myself. I believe both of our numbers and emails are on the website. And once we get enough money, the National Christian Foundation will loan us the money to finish the movie. And that's what we're hoping to do. So we're trying to get up to at least, you know, 100 or 150,000, and then they would help us fund the rest. But
right. And I saw the clip of the news media when they went out there, and you said that after that, it went national, correct?
Oh, God, it was so cool. Actually, not even after that. While it was playing on our local channels, Channel 6, CBS, the reporter called me. She said, oh, my gosh, Tom, this never happens. She said, we just had CBS National call and ask, can we please send it over to them? They wanted it to go national. So that very night, it started going national. It was incredible because I had no idea and didn't know the person, the other person she was interviewing. So if y'all could post that link on your website and people could listen to it, it's absolutely beautiful. She did an incredible job and tells the story and what it's all about.
So how old would Troy be this year? God rest his soul.
Troy would be 35 years old on July 20th. He'll be 35 years old, and he died when he had just turned 31. So he died on July 30th, 2018, and he would be 35. I can't believe it. I my heart. You know, they say when someone passes away, you know, with time things will get better. I can honestly tell you they're wrong. Now, I had my parents die when I was young, and yes, that was very painful and hard, and things did get better as time went on, but when it's your child, a piece of you, or almost my whole heart, I have another son, so I have to remain strong, and I have a grandson, but I can tell you, it doesn't get better. You learn how to handle it, and you learn how to hide it, but I am fighting not only for my son, but for anyone else that is in the same situation, or anyone that is hurting since Troy's passing, and before, but even more so since Troy's passing. I have friends and people that call me and parents that say, I need your help. Please tell me what to do, what to expect. And that's what I do on a daily basis.
Well, you've become an advocate as a mom. You've become an advocate for your child. Even though he's gone, he's not forgotten. And the truth is, we all have a story to tell, but some of us find a life with purpose, and we take that and we run with it, and we become advocates for a cause. And I'm so grateful that you did, because there are people who need an education, and we need to communicate with them that it's not as easy as things look on TV. When you become a police informant, there should be rules and regulations. If you are a drug addict, or if you are addicted to opioids or cigarettes or alcohol, whatever it is, there should be rules to follow, and people should be paying attention. And you've hit the nail on the head by saying that you're going to be helping a lot of people, and we really appreciate you.
Well, that's one of the reasons I absolutely love you guys in this radio station, because that's exactly what you guys do. You are there for everyone, and everyone has a story. And you're out there putting the story out there and spreading the good news and helping people.
Well, and hopefully we'll get these messages out to all of our favorite listeners that are out there listening right now. Make sure that when you have the opportunity to donate, click on those links and see what you can do to help out in Troy's memory. So thank you so much, Donna, for calling in today. And thank you, Sita, for finding all these fantastic guests and all of our great friends.
I know Donna. She's like become one of my friends.
You got a lot of visiting to do over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I'm going to go visit her.
Visit you, Sita. I need to visit you.
There you go. Yeah, curry chicken is abundant.
She'll
here.
Have to come to my 60th birthday party
there
as well.
There you go.
Send me
there
an invite. Go. I'll be there.
There you go. All Danny, right. Thank you for running our board today. And as always, thank you so much for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and friends. Thank you to Kim and all of our great folks that are taking care of this radio station. We'll see you next week, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC.